Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
Today, Monday, September 19th, is the feast of St. Januarius, bishop and martyr. And these are today's headlines. Queen Elizabeth II, the longest reigning monarch in British history, is laid to rest in Windsor Castle. Border clashes between Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan have left almost 100 people dead, and religious in Haiti decry the humanitarian catastrophe that their country is facing. In the Vatican, I'm Christopher Wells. Our top story today, the state funeral of Queen Elizabeth II took place on Monday at London's Westminster Abbey, with 2,000 guests attending the ceremonial event, including 500 world leaders, foreign dignitaries, and senior politicians. Later, the coffin of the late monarch was borne on a gun carriage across London before being taken to Windsor Castle for a private family burial service. Susie Hodges reports from London.
It was the day where mourners from across the world came together to say their final farewell to Elizabeth II, Britain's longest reigning monarch, who died on September the 8th at the age of 96, after more than 70 years on the throne. There was pomp and pageantry at the funeral ceremony held at London's Westminster Abbey, but also scenes of personal and public grieving. Britain's new king, Charles III, had led a sombre procession of royal family members behind his mother's coffin as it was taken from the nearby Westminster Hall to the Abbey for the funeral service. The congregation of around 2,000 people included 500 world leaders, foreign dignitaries, and members of European royal families. Among the guests was Pope Francis's representative, Archbishop Paul Gallagher, Secretary for Relations with States. They heard a series of tributes to the late Queen's lifelong sense of duty and dedication to her people. The sermon at the funeral was given by the Anglican leader, Archbishop Justin Welby, who spoke of the biblical call to serve rather than being served. He recalled how the late Queen, at the age of 21, had vowed that her whole life would be dedicated to serving the nation, saying, "Rarely has such a promise been so well kept." A number of other church leaders offered prayers at the funeral service, including the leader of the Catholic Church in England and Wales. Cardinal Vincent Nicholls, Archbishop of Westminster, gave thanks to the late Queen for the rich bonds of unity and mutual support that she sustained. Following the funeral ceremony, there was a solemn procession as the coffin was borne on a gun carriage for the monarch's final journey across London. Huge crowds lined the route of the procession as gun salutes were fired and the bells of the capital's famous clock tower, Big Ben, tolled every 60 seconds. The coffin was later transferred to a hearse for the journey to the Queen's final resting place in St. George's Chapel at Windsor Castle. It was a fitting send-off for a much-respected and loved Queen who had been such a key figure on the world stage for over 7 decades. For Vatican Radio, I'm Susie Hodges, reporting from London.
Elsewhere in world news, authorities say at least 94 people have died and more than 100 others have been injured in clashes on the Kyrgyzstan-Tajikistan border, the deadliest clashes in years. Stefan Boss has this report.
Combat troops in a military plane. Kyrgyzstan's President Sadir Japarov urged his nation on Monday to trust its army and strategic partners following massive border clashes with neighboring Tajikistan. He said there was no need for volunteer forces at the border with Tajikistan, but concerns remain that the fighting will escalate into a full-scale war. Violence regularly erupts between the two former Soviet republics, whose border has been contested since the collapse of the Russia-led Soviet Union in the early 1990s. But with nearly 100 killed in recent days, the clashes between these mainly Muslim nations were the deadliest in recent memory. Late on Sunday, Kyrgyzstan reported more than a dozen deaths, taking its total death toll to nearly 60. It added that more than 100 people had been injured and declared Monday a day of mourning for the victims. More than 30 people are also believed to have died in Tajikistan recently. The latest fighting involved using tanks, aviation and rocket artillery on a disputed section of the border in Kyrgyzstan's Batken province. Both sides blame each other for the outbreak of violence. Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan share a 1,000 kilometers or 600-mile border, a third disputed. For Vatican Radio, I am Stefan Bos, reporting.
Elsewhere, a parish church has been set ablaze in the northern diocese of Mamfe in northern Cameroon, where 9 people, including 5 priests and a nun, have been abducted by unknown gunmen. Local bishops have strongly condemned the attack, as Lisa Zangarini reports.
The Catholic bishops of the northwestern Anglophone region of Cameroon have condemned in the strongest terms the arson attack and kidnapping of 9 people perpetrated by a group of armed men on Friday evening at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Chang in the Diocese of Mamfe. The abductees, who include 5 priests, a nun and 3 lay people, have been taken to an unknown destination. In a strongly worded statement, the bishops of the Bamenda Ecclesiastical Province expressed shock and utter horror at what they called an unprecedented and heinous attack and urged the immediate release of those abducted while expressing prayerful solidarity with the local Catholic community. The attack against St. Mary's Church is the latest violent incidents targeting church members in the conflict-ridden Anglophone regions, where separatists have been fighting the Francophone-controlled central government since 2017. In their statement, the bishops of Bamenda said the assault has now crossed the red line. The immediate origins of the crisis in Cameroon stem from a year-long protest in the Anglophone regions in 2016, following constant complaints about neglect and marginalisation of the English-speaking community by the Francophone elites who have been leading the country since independence in the early 60s. Tensions soon escalated in a secessionist conflict, with separatists calling for the creation of an independent state called Ambazonia. The violence has taken a heavy toll on the civilian population in the northwest and southwest regions, with a general sense of insecurity, forcing millions of Cameroonians to flee to neighbouring countries. Though the church has insistently maintained a neutral stance while trying to advocate for peace and reconciliation, it has been criticised by both conflicting parties for not taking a tough enough position against the other side, and several church members have been attacked, abducted or harassed. I am Lisa Zangarini.
From the Americas, in the wake of protests, violence, vandalism and looting that stem from a catastrophic socioeconomic downfall in Haiti, the country's religious have issued an urgent appeal for action, decrying the suffering of the people and offering solidarity to priests and religious. As Linda Bordoni reports, it's not the first time that the men and women religious of Haiti have raised the alarm, joining the call of the island nation's bishops that have repeatedly denounced insecurity and gang violence.
Expressing dismay and closeness, in particular to the priests and religious of the country, who have been deeply affected in their physical and moral integrity and in their works, and to all the other persons and institutions that have been victims of acts of vandalism and looting in recent days, the Conference of Haitian Religious is demanding that state authorities assume their responsibility and do their utmost to protect lives and property. Its appeal comes as socio-political tension continues to mount in the impoverished island nation, where widespread looting and violence was reported on Friday as thousands protested, demanding the ousting of Prime Minister Ariel Henry. The protesters have put the PM's departure as a precondition to leaving the streets, where tires are burning, barricades are erected, and establishments ransacked in many cities. Protests have also grown increasingly violent, with public entities, private firms, and even offices of church, humanitarian, and international organizations pillaged, including several educational institutions such as the Immaculate Conception, the Holy Family, and a public university. On Thursday, offices of Caritas Internationalis and the World Food Programme also came under attack. The CHR says it joins the cry of the Catholic bishops of Haiti in solidarity with the suffering and secular misery of the people and endorses their very legitimate demands. It pledges to continue to work tirelessly at their side against misery, ignorance, insecurity, absurd violence, and in favour of social justice and integral development. It asks for prayers and issues a powerful appeal to the conscience and responsibility of all actors and sectors, both national and international, to commit themselves with honesty to the search for a peaceful solution to the crisis that it describes as a veritable humanitarian catastrophe. I'm Linda Bordoni.
In church news, since the beginning of September, recently ordained bishops from around the world have been meeting in Rome to take part in the formation course for new bishops, normally held annually. Promoted by the Dicastery for Bishops, together with the Dicastery for Eastern Churches, the annual course has as its theme the service of the bishop in proclaiming the gospel in the changing epoch following the pandemic. The tradition of holding the formation course started in the year 2000 by St. John Paul II. Following an interruption of the course held in Rome due to the pandemic, this year saw a total of 344 bishops coming to the city, requiring the course to be held in two sessions to accommodate the large numbers. The first session ran from the first week of September, and the second session from September 12th until today. Bishop Larry Kulik of the Diocese of Greenberg, Pennsylvania, in the United States, participated in the second session. He spoke with Vatican News about the great sense of fraternity among the bishops, their support for one another, and their unity in diversity.
It's been a wonderful opportunity. And even though there's a lot of diversity among the bishops representing all of the different regions of the world, what has been so amazing to me is first the fraternity among the bishops, the brotherhood of the bishops. And that gives us, I think, all a great sense of feeling supported and being in this ministry together. But also what's been very amazing is we've had wonderful presentations from the different dicasteries and different opportunities to have smaller group discussions is the similarities in so many ways of the needs of the people of God throughout the world, the challenges that the church faces. And so while we have a lot of differences and uniquenesses, it has been very affirming to me that we have not only a lot of unity in the office of the bishop in sharing that, but we can help each other because we have so many common needs that the church is trying to respond to. And we can help each other not only from giving ourselves moral support, but also sharing some just best practices and how we're doing things in each of our respective dioceses.
And that brings us just about to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, we invite you to visit our web portal at www.vaticannews.va. Also, don't forget to catch the latest updates on our Facebook page and on our Twitter feed. Many thanks this evening go to our sound engineers in the studio. In the Vatican, I'm Christopher Wells.